with the 32nd pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
It's almost that time. We're just a little over 3 weeks away from the 2018 NFL Draft, and we're breaking it all down here on the 103rd edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast. Hello, everyone. I'm Chris McPherson, joined alongside Fran Duffy. Got a great show for everyone here, so we're going to get into the latest news and rumors regarding the Eagles and the entire NFL in our draft buzz. And I really like our Mr. Relevant this week, our good friend Dane Brugler from NFL Draft Scout. He just released his draft guide, so we're going to delve into that a little bit. Our pick six this week, Fran, six small school prospects who fans should get to know.
One of my favorite pick sixes of the year.
And, of course, your questions in our draft mailbag. And if you have a question, make sure to rate or leave a comment wherever you listen to our podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever, and we will get to those questions. But let's get things rolling at the top of the show here in Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, everyone, some Eagles-related news to get things started here, Fran. The Eagles made a roster move on this Tuesday.
Yes, they did.
Adding veteran linebacker Paul Warlow, native of Wilmington, Delaware, plays college ball at Delaware, unfortunately, to a one-year contract. So some more veteran linebacking depth for the Philadelphia Eagles as they get ready for the 2018 season.
A guy who's got plenty of starting experience in the NFL with the Atlanta Falcons. Didn't play a ton with Detroit last year, but is a core four special teamer. Again, a guy who's got experience, doesn't force the Eagles now when they go into this NFL draft in a few weeks. And this is what they've done so well over the last couple of years. You don't force your hand. You've got, quote-unquote, fallback options where, if they're unable to take a linebacker now, you feel good about your depth, and you if you wanted to line up and play the week after the draft, they could line up and play. So I think this move speaks to that.
But it also doesn't keep them.
Exactly, and that's the other thing, too.
Either.
Exactly.
It's not like all of a sudden now, wow, this take them out of linebacker at 32
exactly
or
right.
in the third round or the fourth round of the draft, I should say, since right now the Eagles don't have a day two pick. But the Eagles, their third move at linebacker so far this offseason, bringing back Nigel Bradham, signing veteran Corey Nelson to compete on the outside, and now Paul Warlow added to the mix. So I think one of the question marks, and as we've even progressed through this season's podcast here on Journey to the Draft, I think we've said a number of times linebacker was one of the question marks for the Eagles. So at least they've addressed it to this point. We'll see if they add some more youth to the mix in the 2018 NFL draft. Now, let's get into some NFL draft news. What do you make of the soap opera, let's say, between Jim Mora, speaking of former Falcons head coach Jim Mora, and Josh Rosen, one of the top quarterback prospects in the NFL draft. Jim Mora making some comments on NFL Network, first that he would take Sam Darnold over Josh Rosen, and almost digging a bigger hole when further discussing those comments, saying that Rosen is a millennial, throwing that out there with all the
so is every other player in the draft,
of course, yes, but with the negative connotation that comes along with that, that he needs to be told why, and that he has a lot of interest outside of football, and if you can keep him focused, he's going to be a great prospect, but that's going to be the challenge for the coach.
And I think that's the main part of it that I think would raise eyebrows, and the fact that the first thing he said, this was back NFL Network a few weeks ago, was, if you were the Cleveland Browns, what would you do, or how do you see the first pick going? And he said, well, Sam Darnold is the best fit for the Cleveland Browns. Instead of taking his guy, he goes with the crosstown rival, the biggest rival for his guy in the draft. It's just strange to me. Like, no one would have faulted him if he said, oh, yeah, Sam Darnold's really talented, but I got to go with my guy. Like, no one would have, blinked an eye about it, and no one would have thought any worse of him. But I don't know. I don't really know what to make of it. The more I listen to him and the more I hear about him, talking to people about him, maybe I'm, drinking the Kool-Aid on him, but I feel like Josh Rosen's going to turn into a nice player, and I hope that he doesn't go to the New York Giants.
That's the thing. And as we start talking about the mocks and – a lot of fans might be like, well, the Eagles don't need to worry about the quarterback situation. And that's true. But that number two pick is sitting there, and we're all wondering, are the Giants going to get their guy of the future at quarterback? Are they going to take a positional player outside of the signal caller spot? These are all some valid questions that are going to impact the Eagles down the road. But I do love how Josh Rosen has responded on Twitter, you know, with one tweet that simply just said, why? ? And that got a lot of response. And then his other one said, opinions and things that are taken too seriously.
Yeah, I'm not making a huge big deal out of it. I do think it's like it's a little strange. The more I look at this top five, the more I think like, okay, one, it seems like it's going to be either Darnold or Josh Allen. I feel like if they stay put, it's going to be Darnold. It would be a shocker if they stayed put and selected Josh Allen. Like that would be so surprising. And then to me, at number two, it seems like everybody's saying, okay, if the Giants can't get Sam Darnold, they're going to trade back and they're going to take Saquon or Chubb or Quentin Nelson, and whoever trades up to two takes Josh Rosen. I'm good with that. I'm good with Josh Rosen going to Denver or Buffalo or Miami, you know, wherever.
Just not New York.
I'd rather him not go to New York. And then the Jets, I feel like it's going to be Mayfield. I feel like Mayfield's going to be a Jet. You go to four in Cleveland, and we'll see what they do. It's going to be really, really interesting, this top five of the draft.
Why would a team like the Browns, any team for that matter, take Allen over Darnold? What would be the case for the pro-Allen people?
Well, because the other thing that people don't necessarily – you obviously are well aware of this, but like the interview process is so important. And so, you know, and during that interview process, coaches and GMs and everybody, the owners, they all fall in love with a person. They don't fall in love with necessarily a player. You fall in love with a person. And so if you've got two players that are graded pretty similarly and you have one guy in the building – and remember, think about this. Think about all the interactions that a team is going to have with a player. You go back to Carson Wentz when he was drafted by the Eagles. You have scouts, obviously, that are on the road during the fall and during the summer, and they meet with them. But then you go to the Senior Bowl. You meet with them at the Senior Bowl for, you know, an hour plus, the Senior Bowl. You go to the Combine. You get some more time. Not just the formal, but the informal at the Combine. You get to see him work out there. You talk with him on the field, all that. Then you go to his pro day, and you meet with him there. You may take him to dinner. You might go to lunch. You might, you know, have a couple meals. You get to private workout, so now you get him in the unscripted workout, and you put him through the paces and do exactly what you want to do. And you have your private visit at home, you know, and you're on your campus for one or two days, and you get some time there. You might visit with him again. Like, there are so – you're stacking hours and hours and days, and at some point – you're going to find out one of these guys is like your guy. And so that's the scenario where you fall in love with a Josh Allen over a Sam Darnold. I think when you're looking at based strictly off film, Darnold's a better prospect. So I think that's the case.
All right, let's get into some of the mock drafts. Because right at this point in the process right now, it's top 30 visits, it's pro days.
That's where we're at.
Not too many rumblings are going on beyond the very, very top of the draft at the moment.
I'm so excited for the crazy rumblings to start. I love the crazy rumblings.
The one thing I missed this year, and I think it's partly because he put it behind a paywall, was the Bob McGinn hit piece.
Yes.
Which is always a combine staple. That was like your, you know, Sunday or Monday of the combine. That was like you're going to breakfast, and that's what you're scanning through and seeing all the different comments. So,
no question.
That's a tradition that I certainly miss this year. So going through the mock drafts. Okay, so we got five new ones. Okay, five different players. We'll start with Charlie Casserly, who has a thing for quarterbacks from NFL Networks.
Yes.
And Charlie goes with no selection.
No selection for the Eagles.
That they trade out. And it would make sense because you figure they want to accumulate more picks.
Yep.
No day two. Still no day two selections at this point.
Right.
How?
Now you get your day two selection by trading out.
So that's the one option there. Next here, Josh Norris. Good friend from NBC Sports, Roto World, goes with DJ Moore, the Maryland wide receiver. And I want to ask Dane Brugler, our Mr. Relevant this week.
Oh, yeah. About him.
He's a big DJ
Moore
fan.
So
next up here, and wide receiver, you know, they added Mike Wallace, but again, it's a one-year deal. It's not, again, it's a good temporary fix for the position, but do you have a long-term answer there on the outside? Peter Schrager does a great job with Good Morning Football and NFL Network. Has Jair Alexander, the Louisville corner.
Who can play inside and outside.
So the versatility plus there. Mel Kiper in his latest goes with a tight end. Player we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show, so we won't get too much into him now. Small school wonder, Dallas Goedert.
My personal favorite tight end.
Out of South Dakota State. And Lance Zierlein, last but not least, also from NFL.com, you know, does the analysis for 400-plus draft prospects here. Goes with Darius Geis, the very popular selection there at running back.
Yeah.
Number 32. Surprised that I didn't see Josh Norris as full mock, but surprised that Norris doesn't mock him there.
Yes, and he may have Geis going earlier, and that might be the issue.
I would expect.
I know he's been like pounding that drum in terms of the Eagles Geis connection. But what's interesting to me is we have five big names, and five completely different outcomes.
Yeah.
And that's why, I go into Wawa over the weekend.
Okay.
And my guy at Wawa.
Oh, you have your guy.
Oh, I've got my guy. Yeah.
Okay. I'm jealous. I go to the, I don't have a guy.
No, I've got a guy. So okay. Kyle goes to me. Goes. His friend, what are they going to do at 32? And I'm like, Kyle, I have no idea. There's just so many. It's not like last year when they're at 14.
Yeah.
And you've got your list of names. It's just it's so impossible to kind of predict how this is going to go because there's so many different combinations. And chances are there's going to be a guy that falls that we weren't expecting.
Exactly. You're 32.
Yes.
I mean, I was asked the question, during holiday dinner, Easter dinner.
Oh, yeah.
Sunday.
Yep, no question.
Family friend. Oh, who do you think they're taking in the draft? I'm like, my Uncle Jim, he's a family friend. I call him Uncle Jim. We're at 32. I'm like, you got to tell me who's going in the first 20 picks. I'm like, I can give you positions where I think they could go, but in some ways they're wide open where they can sit there and take the best player available because, as you said, they've filled up the holes to the point where if they have to play on Sunday, they can play and not have a, huge need or huge crevice that needs to be addressed. So that's going to do it for Draft Buzz. Now we're going to bring on our good friend Dane Brugler, who is this week's Mr. Relevant.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
Our Mr. Relevant this week is relevant each and every week. It's not just during draft season because he does so much phenomenal work putting together an outstanding draft guide. It's our good friend Dane Brugler. You can follow him on Twitter at DP Brugler. You can find his work on NFL Draft Scout. And Dane, you can certainly tell us where we can get the draft guide because we know you're pubbing it right now on your Twitter feed. And speaking of your Twitter feed, the first thing I want to get into is a discussion about nickel defenders in this year's draft class. Some of the hybrid defensive backs. Everyone's talking about Minkah Fitzpatrick, where he's going to fit in at the next level, Derwin James, and those guys are expected to go pretty high. But Justin Reed is a player who's in the conversation there as a late first, early second round selection, and there's been some mocks and discussion and rumblings that the Eagles could have an interest in him. Can you talk about some of these hybrid defenders and the value that the versatility brings and how you sort these guys and if there's another one who you're in love with who should be in this discussion as well at the top?
Yeah, the nickel position is something that is basically a starter in today's NFL. I mean, we've talked about that at length over the years, how the NFL has evolved on defense. And with the offensive packages, guys that can cover but are big enough to hold up in run support, but guys that can play inside, just the versatility is key. And I think it's a lot of times, guys aren't traditional outside corners. They're not traditional free safeties, but they might be an ideal nickel defender. And for me, a guy who I think fits that mold is Rashawn Golden from Tennessee, who isn't that traditional outside corner. He's not that traditional free safety, but you put him in as the nickel defender, and that's what he played at Tennessee. I think that's what fits him best. He ran a 4.61 at the combine, disappointed with some of his athletic testing, but the play speed is there. The toughness is there. I think a lot of people might know him best as the guy that gave the double bird salute to the Alabama fans after that kick return for a touchdown this past year. But this guy can really play. You watch the tape and you get excited about what he does as a blitzer, what he does in coverage, what he does against the run. So I think he's a guy to keep on the radar. Maybe not in the back end of round one, but in round two, I think he makes some sense. And then you mentioned Justin Reed, who I think will be in that conversation to be a late first-round pick. I grade him as more of a late second, but I think his value on draft day is going to be in that late first. You know, we know about the bloodline. His brother, Eric Reed, a former first-round pick, top 20 pick. He's not the, you know, Justin Reed's not the same enforcer that his brother is, but I think there's reason to be encouraged about what he can do at the next level. And I with him, when I watched him, I saw a solid player. I didn't see a special player. I think the issues in coverage is really what got me kind of on the fence with him. His first reaction is to grab. His footwork is an issue at times when he's, you know, playing man-to-man. Because he played a lot in the slot, covering in man-to-man. So, you know, we see a lot of that. And he did a lot of good things as well. I mean, he had 5 picks this year. I think he had 11 passes defended, tested really well, I think better than a lot of people thought at the combine. So with Justin Reed, I think in that late first discussion, I see a solid player, not a special player. But, you know, you can win with guys like that. And so he would make sense at pick number 32.
Dane, one of the things I like about this class is that it seems to be really deep in that area, right? And like those sub-package, those inside defensive backs, whether it's a big safety, you know, a big nickel, or your traditional like slot corner. And I think when you're talking about either players that we project with the ability to be able to do that and that are going to go high, like, you know, obviously a Denzel Ward, a Jair Alexander, Dante Jackson, Mike Hughes from Central Florida, Nick Nelson from Wisconsin. A lot of those guys, I think, we're probably talking in the first couple rounds that have the ability to play both inside, outside. But then I look and I go to the middle rounds and the late rounds, and like I love DJ Reed from Kansas State, you know, Duke Dawson from Florida, MJ Stewart from North Carolina, Taron Johnson from Weber State, Parry Nickerson from Tulane. Like, you go down the list and you keep going, and there's just so many of these guys that I think have not only the ability to play in the slot, but have shown at the college level that they can do it at a high level. Is there somebody from that second tier or third tier that really stands out to you, guys that, you know, maybe you saw at the Senior Bowl or that you've watched on film that you really like?
Yeah, you just threw out, you know, 5-6 great names that are in that mix. And I'll put another one in there. Avonte Maddox from Pitt, who is undersized at 5'9", 184 pounds. But the guy can fly. He's a 4'3 athlete. The initial burst is outstanding. You know, he's undersized, and that's going to ding him, because I think he also plays small on film. But with that speed, his toughness, and he's very productive. He had double-digit passes defended each of the last 3 years for Pitt. And so, you know, we're not talking about, I don't think he's a top 100 player, but if you're looking for that mid-round guy that fits that position, that makes a lot of sense. And then you're looking at the safety position, a guy that I think, you know, has shown on film that he can handle those nickel responsibilities, Tracy Walker from Louisiana, who I don't think gets enough love. He's in my top 100. You watch the Texas A&M tape. He's a big reason why Christian Kirk had only like 34 yards in that game. There was a lot of time when they were matched up man-to-man, and he did a nice job against a Texas A&M wide receiver who's likely a top 50 pick in this draft. So I think those two names, you know, I don't know if either will go in the top 100, but early on day three, I think both would provide excellent value at that position.
Dane, I want to go to the offensive side of the ball with the pass catchers, in particular a wide receiver. There's a guy who you have in DJ Moore over the consensus, I would say, atop the wide receiver class in Calvin Ridley. I know you've been banging the drum for Moore on Twitter. What are the reasons for him being your top receiver in this year's draft class?
Well, actually, I do have Calvin Ridley as my number one. I have Calvin Ridley as my 11th overall player, and then I have DJ Moore as my 14th overall player. So they're very close. But I do love DJ Moore quite a bit. He's a guy that I had a scout tell me to watch him back in probably October. And so I really started to hone in, because the scout told me he was definitely coming out as a junior. And so I started to do more work on him, and I was blown away how impressive he is. And then, you know, he was the rare athlete who was actually taller and faster at the combine than any of us expected, coming in at 6 foot even, running a 4.42 in the 40-yard dash. Now, I don't think he plays like a 4.42 athlete. He's more like a 4.47 athlete, which not a big deal. I mean, he's still an impact player. And I just can't help but get Steve Smith vibes when you watch him. And, you know, I'm talking about Carolina, former Carolina Panthers and Baltimore Ravens, Steve Smith. And I don't say that very lightly. We're talking about a possible Hall of Famer here. But that's the type of vibe I get from watching DJ Moore's tape. He's physical. He's tough. He's a very good route runner, yards after the catch because of that power. And the reason why I think some teams will prefer DJ Moore over Calvin Ridley is DJ Moore is 20 pounds bigger. And so in terms of durability, in terms of breaking tackles, that's really going to help him. And you know, I know Calvin Ridley's probably the better route runner at this point, but DJ Moore is not far behind. He is an above average route runner as well. So I think both guys are in the top 15 for me. I think both will end up going in the first round. And when you look at his production at Maryland, catching a pass from 8 different quarterbacks over his career, it just, that's something that really stands out. He led the Big Ten in receiving this past year for Maryland, who you know, went through a carousel of quarterbacks just this season alone. So for all those reasons, DJ Moore is deserving of a top 20 pick this year, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if he ends up going that high.
My apologies on the rankings there, Dean. I thought you had Moore there at number one. The big thing is, as long as we're not getting the Steve Smith that played in Philadelphia very briefly, I think all would be fine with the fans here in Philly. But just sticking with the receivers real quick, how many and who do you expect to go in those first two rounds, let's say? Because it seems like Moore and Ridley are pretty much there to be first-round picks. After that, you hear some names like, you know, Christian Kirk has been mentioned, Cortland Sutton has been mentioned as a potential first-round pick. Who else do you think could be in that first round, and who do you think will hear their name called on early day two at wide receiver?
Well, I think there's two receivers in this draft who, because I think Calvin Ridley and DJ Moore, as much as I love them, I think they're high-end number two wide receivers in the NFL. And that's not a negative necessarily. I think there's only, 12 to 15 true number one wideouts in the NFL. And I'm not sure if Calvin Ridley or DJ Moore will be in that discussion, but I think they're high-end number twos, which, can be very valuable for a team. I think there are two receivers in this draft who have the potential to be a true number one receiver for a team, the Julio Jones, the A.J. Green, that type of mold, and that's Cortland Sutton and Equanimeous St. Brown. I think both are in that top 40 discussion. Cortland Sutton, he performed a lot better at the combine than I think a lot of people expected, especially in the short area agility drills, the short shuttle, the three cone. And so the big issue with Cortland Sutton is his route. When you watch him on film, he's not getting open. You don't see him sink and explode at the top of the route. It's really going to be tough for him to uncover against NFL level corners when he can't do it in the AAC. But when you look at the offense and what he's asked to do at SMU, I don't think the route tree was emphasized. I don't think that part of his game was really emphasized. And so what he did at the combine is very encouraging, because it says that he has the athletic ability to do so, to separate in short areas. It just comes down to muscle memory and being able to get it down and become that route. And so becoming a better route runner at the NFL level is far from a sure thing. And so for that reason, I think he's going to be discounted somewhere in the top 40 picks. Maybe he goes late first, maybe early second. But I think Cortland Sutton has the potential to be a true number one. And then St. Brown from Notre Dame, a guy who is built really well at almost 6'5". He's 215 pounds. He's a 4'4 athlete. Another guy who needs to develop more of the route tree, but needs to get a little tougher at the top of routes, use that size to his advantage. But the raw skills, you get excited about. He's only 21 years old, 33-inch arms, creates that big catch radius. He can help you out at every level of the defense, from short passes to deep. So I think those two guys, keep an eye on them. And then the top senior receiver in this draft, to me, is Anthony Miller from Memphis, who ran today, actually. He had a foot injury in the bowl game, so we didn't get a chance to see him at the Senior Bowl. Couldn't see him at the combine. He was able to run today, put in some good numbers, thanks in the 4.4s, jumped really well. I thought 39-inch vert for Anthony Miller. So those are great numbers. But a guy that, a former walk-on, the production's off the charts, broke Isaac Bruce's records at Memphis. It's hard not to watch, or it's hard not to like Anthony Miller when you watch him. Everything that he did in that offense. So I think Anthony Miller is deserving of top 40 consideration in this draft as well.
So, Dane, obviously, if NFL teams agree with that assessment that, a Cortland Sutton or an Equanimeous St. Brown could become a true number one, we could see them be surprise first-round picks. Are there any other players that every year there's always those surprise names that go off the board earlier than we expect in that first frame? Is there anybody else that we should be aware of, from that respect, that could surprise us and go off the board in the first round?
Well, I think DJ Chark, keeping with wide receivers, this guy can fly. And when you're 6'3", 200 pounds, and you run in the low 4.3s, You know, we saw it with Will Fuller a couple years ago from Notre Dame, went in the top 25 to the Houston Texans. You know, if you have the ability to create explosive plays, and you might be a one-trick pony, but if you're really good at that one trick, then teams are going to value what you can do and what you can offer. And so DJ Chark has a chance with his ability to stretch out the defense, get behind the deepest defender, and create that that possibility of a big play. You might have something. And it's tough because at LSU, you know, the quarterback play was up and down. You know, he had several drops. He was very inconsistent, unreliable. But when he was on, when he hit, I mean, it was awesome. And so that height, that length, that speed, that blend is something that's going to, some team's going to fall in love with that and take DJ Chark in the top 50. And it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up going top 32.
So, Dane, you work down in Frisco, Texas. You know a lot about the Dallas Cowboys, and you know they're sitting there at number 19. Just from an NFC East standpoint, where do you see their biggest needs, and what direction do you think they go early on in the NFL draft?
Well, in typical Cowboys fashion, they're adding some lower-priced free agents in need areas so they can try to go best available when they pick at 19. You know, they're going to look at, if you look at the top 30 visits, because that's the Cowboys, they draft their top 30. And one of those top 30 is who they're going to draft. They're looking at the linebackers. They're looking at Leighton Vander Esch, Rashawn Evans. You look at the offensive guards. They're looking at Will Hernandez. You look at some of the safeties, some of the linebackers. They're looking at all these guys, wide receivers. They're bringing a lot of wide receivers with from Calvin Ridley to DJ Moore, Daron Payne, Vita Vea on the defensive line they really like. So any of those directions would not surprise me. Last year, they were locked into a defensive end in the first round, took Taco Charlton. This year, they could go in a lot of different directions here. Right now in my mock draft, I haven't taken Leighton Vander Esch, the Boise State linebacker, a guy who to me is an ascending player, is getting better and better the more reps he sees on the football field. I think he's a possibility. You know, with Jalen Smith, you just don't know what's going on with him as the Mike. You know, Sean Lee's, he's entrenched as the Will, but you know, Sean Lee hasn't been able to stay healthy for 16 games in a season. So adding more linebacker depth makes sense, especially with Anthony Hitchens now in Kansas City. So I think linebackers are a possibility, and then don't rule out defensive line because they traditionally do not take one technique or the, you know, the nose tackle position early, but they will if they think that player has three technique or under tackle traits. And you look at Vita Vea, you look at Daron Payne, you can make a case that both those guys, with their quickness, with their athleticism, they have some of those under tackle under tackle traits. And so I think both those guys are in the discussion at 19.
Two players that I would just hate to see end up in Dallas are Daron Payne and Leighton Vander Esch. So I would hate to see that happen. One last question for you, Dan. We're getting ready to review some of our favorite small school guys in this draft in the next segment. We're going to hit on some of these bigger guys like the Dallas Goddards and the Darius Leonards. But are there some really under-the-radar small school guys that have you excited? Maybe that like that next tier players that we probably aren't going to mention in terms of the non-FBS guys?
Oh, yeah, there always are. And, you know, this year I really like a couple corners from smaller schools. Tremont Smith from Central Arkansas, he's a guy who's getting a lot of love in league circles right now. He ran a 4.32 at his pro day. Really good ball production, 15 interceptions over his career. He has return value as well. So Tremont Smith, corner from UCA, a name to keep an eye on. Mike Ford from Southeastern Missouri, another one, another corner. And then I don't know, you know, Middle Tennessee, not a, it's an FBS program, but I still think, you know, goes overlooked a lot of times, some of their players. Charvarius Ward, a big, you know, 6'1", 200-pound press corner, tested really well. He had a 4.44 40-yard dash. So I think those are a few of these corners, you know, because we know, you know, a lot of the you know, cornerback, it's the one position where the testing numbers can get you drafted. And so for a lot of these corners, even if you're a smaller school guy, if you go out there and you have the measurables and you run you know, really good times and you can impress, you're going to, you know, because especially when we get to the late portion of the draft, fifth, sixth, seventh round, a lot of times teams are going to draft you based on okay, or can we get this guy as a priority free agent, or is he going to we're going to have a lot of competition? If we're going to have a lot of competition, we're going to take him in the seventh, maybe over some other players, just to guarantee that you get him on your roster. And so some of these smaller school corners who are testing really well during the process, wouldn't surprise me if they get pushed into a later portion of the draft because of these testing numbers.
Dane Brugler. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at DP Brugler. Dane, where can fans find your NFL draft guide?
Best Ways on Twitter. I've it pinned at the top, the link. It's an automatic PDF download. I fight the bosses every year to keep it under $10 because I want to make sure that it's, you know, easily accessible for everybody. There's 450 scouting reports in there, and there's over 1,200 names, players that I've ranked overall. So it's a resource that I know a lot of people use religiously on draft weekend, not only just for the first round, the top guys, but into the later portion of the draft, the smaller school guys, and maybe some guys you don't know much about. So hopefully people pick it up and they enjoy it.
Congrats on it. Can't wait to pour through it myself. And thank you very much for joining us here as this week's Mr. Relevant on the Journey to Draft podcast.
Now it's time for Pick Six.
Now Pick Six. And as we alluded to in the previous segment with Mr. Brugler, six small school prospects. And Fran, why don't you start things off here? Actually, let's start off with, I feel personally, there are not as many small school guys to get excited about this year, but
I have a theory on that.
Okay.
My theory is that since we got a late start to it because we were occupied with something more important, that maybe the small school guys haven't had the opportunity to climb into your eyesight.
That's a good one. There have been, I mean, there's some, and we've discussed some of these players on
and
the
we'll
podcast.
We'll discuss a few others, yeah.
I feel like the cream rises to the top, and I just don't know if there's as much cream.
See, I love the small school. Like, I remember even going into, like, when we were, like, prepping in case we were going to the Senior Bowl, thinking, mm-hmm. like, man, it seems like there's a lot of small school guys in this class. And we'll talk about six here, but, I mean, I had trouble picking my three because I could have picked, like, 10 that I felt, like, you know, not even just like, oh, yeah, I know who this guy is, but that I've watched and studied, and I'm like, yeah, this guy's an NFL player. And the first one is Dallas Goedert from South Dakota State. And yeah, he is a big name. And to me, he grades out as my number one tight end in the class. I have Gesicki ranked ahead of him because I think Gesicki's upside is a little bit higher. But Dallas Goedert, to me...
So who's your number one then?
I mean, Gesicki is the number one, but he doesn't like... I think Goddard's a better player right now and will have more success early on unless Gesicki goes to a team that is able to kind of leverage his pass catching and, you know, be able
I'm
to
I'm trying
around
for the fans
it.
Clarify because you say Goddard's your number one.
Goddard, great. So, like, I mean, you know how, like, my stuff works. So, like,
I know.
Cause I know.
Sit,
you
there's
know.
Two desks that separate where we sit, you know, every day, but not for everyone out there.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, Goddard, to me, you know, you watch him, and I think that his all-around game speaks for itself. He's not a great blocker. I don't want to sell it as if he's, like, you know, this mauler at the point of attack. But, number one, he was used in that role more than Gesicki, and he's got the ability. To me, he shows a little bit more willingness, a little bit more potential there as a blocker. I love everything that both of those guys do at the catch point. I think that Kosicki's a better athlete, but I think when you look at Dallas Goedert, you know, you're talking about a complete package in terms of size, hands, ball skills. I think he's a developing route runner, probably a better route runner overall than Gesicki is. To me, I look at both guys, and I think they're really good players. But Dallas Goedert is outstanding, and I'm a big, big fan of his. I think he's going to be a really good starter in the NFL.
Not to go off track here, but where does Hunter Henry fit in the discussion Ooh. For you among the tight ends? You got your database right in front of you.
Yeah.
So
well, Hunter. Oh, you mean Hayden Hurst?
Hayden Hurst, yes.
Hunter Henry. I was like, oh man, we're Hunter, stacking years on years
back,
here.
So.
Hayden Hurst to me,
double H's. So,
I think Hayden Hurst to me would be like three or four. And it just depends on what you want. Like I love Ryan Izzo from Florida State, but okay. Izzo is a really good blocker. And offers more, you know, in terms of receiver, he's like an intermediate, you know, he's got solid hands, but he's not going to be like a guy down the seam. Yeah. Whereas Hurst, you can do a little bit more with. So depending on what you value, I think they're graded in the same tier for me. It's just a matter of what you want.
So what's your rankings there?
Gesicki, Goddard as one and two. Izzo, Hurst, and Schultz are all grouped together in one tier. And it's a matter of what you're looking for.
Gotcha. My first guy, we've talked about him on the podcast before, Nate Shepard from Fort Hays State. Comes from north of the border, started his college career as a linebacker at just over 200 pounds. Well, now he's 6'4", 310, and has had 22 tackles for loss in the past two seasons. So phenomenal showing at the Senior Bowl. And he's on, I think, pretty much everyone's radar at this point. A great story in terms of getting here to this point. It's going to be interesting to see where he lands in the draft.
He's a guy I'm excited to do more work on. I was really intrigued with what I've seen from so far. He's not all the way there yet, obviously, but a guy that's got really high potential. I'm excited to watch more. One guy who I got turned on to back in the summer, I had somebody tell me, you need to make sure you watch this kid before the season. And I had a chance to watch him, and I really liked him, and then watched him again this year, and he's a really fun player. He's a linebacker, Darius Leonard from South Carolina State. He's 6'2", he's 234 pounds, he's got freakishly long arms, he plays sideline to sideline, a four-year starter. I don't want to get too deep into the scouting report, Chris, because it turns out he is my scouting report for this week on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, but I'm a big fan of this kid. I really like the way he plays. I think he's got three-down potential in the NFL.
My next guy, I wanted to go somewhere along the offensive positions, and I found Rock Thomas, Jacksonville State, former top recruit, was Alabama's Mr. Football, the Gatorade State Player of the Year, started his college career at Auburn, ended up at Jacksonville State, and this past season had over 1,000 yards rushing, but also offers something in the pass game, over 20 catches. 5'11", 193 pounds. He's more of a change of pace type back, but the physical talent is there. It's just a matter of finding a team that's going to want to utilize him in the right role.
Yeah, Rock Thomas is an intriguing player in what is a deep running back class. So it'll be interesting to see how high he goes. One more guy I'm going to mention, my last one, is a player I mentioned briefly when we talked with Dane. Taron Johnson from Weber State. 5'11", 192 pounds, can play outside or inside, was a 3.5-year starter for the Wildcats out there. Two-time All-American, he was the Big Sky Defensive MVP this past season. What I like about him is his competitiveness. You know, he's a guy who is just relentless in the way he plays. He's very instinctive. Reminds me, I wrote down the guy that he reminded me of was Cortland Finnegan, who was a longtime player of the Tennessee Titans and then the Tampa Bay Bucks. He's got that edgy style about him, and I think that he projects really well to the inside in the NFL. I think he'll be a really nice slot corner. Not a size speed guy. I mean, again, under 6 foot. He's 5'11". He ran 4.5, so not terrible, but he's not an explosive athlete. I think Taron Johnson projects really well to the slot. I'm a big fan of his game.
My last guy here, you know, we've talked about the quarterbacks ad nauseum. Well, there's one that is going to be available on day three who could be of intrigue, and that's Kyle Lauletta out of Richmond. Going to mention Richmond because of Joe Douglas. That's his alma mater. But the all-time passing leader for the Spiders, 73 career touchdowns, had a 65% completion rate this past season, was the CAA's Offensive Player of the Year. So someone who you get him in the right system, could be a nice developmental prospect for a team.
I like that. And again, I could have kept going. We were talking off camera a little bit. Alex Kappa from Humboldt State definitely could have easily been in this group, and I think he could be a day two pick. Much like the kid from Hobart a couple years ago who went to the Bucks. Whose name is
Ali Marpet?
Yes, Alex Kappa, I think, could be taken in that same slot. You look at Brandon Parker, the tackle from North Carolina A&T. There's small school O line and small school corners, like Dane had mentioned earlier. Those are the two areas. Receiver as well, Dorice Fountain from what school did that kid go to? He's another guy. I actually haven't studied him yet, and I'm really excited to because everybody seems to like him because he went to the Shrine Game, I believe, and tore it up down there.
Do you like the Penn slot receiver at all?
Justin Watson. I've watched him because I watched him before the Shrine Game in case we ended up going down there. He's a big kid who moves pretty well, and he lines up at a couple different spots. So he is interesting. He catches pretty much everything that comes his way. He was extremely productive at the Ivy League level. I mean, 40 starts, almost 300 catches. Crazy. Justin Watson is intriguing, but there's a lot of small school guys in this class. I'm excited about some of these guys.
Opening my eyes as this goes from pick 6 to pick 10.
Pick 10?
Yeah.
Pick 16.
It's going to be the Baker's dozen.
That's right.
Soon enough. So That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pick 6. Now to your questions in our draft mailbag.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
Final segment here on this week's episode of the Journey to Draft podcast. Your questions in our draft mailbag, and we're getting a lot more questions from Apple Podcasts. So
it's the easiest way to guarantee you're going to get on the show. Just go to Apple Podcasts and comment.
What if someone leaves a 1-star rating but has a question?
I'll probably still put you on the show.
I don't know if I want.
I mean, I wouldn't recommend it. I'm not going to say go do it.
Exactly.
Maybe we won't put you on the show if you do that.
Maybe not.
I don't know. We'll still thank you.
Well, first question from Apple Podcast comes from Luke Campbell 99. Has a few questions here, so it's actually not just one here, but I'll start with the first one here. The odds are that Ronald Jones falls to 32. Who's a good pro comparison for Ronald Jones? And if the Eagles do take a running back at 32, does that hurt Jay Ajayi's future with the team?
First part, I would say there's a pretty good chance that Ronald Jones is there.
Seems like he's going to be
there. I would say it's almost certain that he'll be there, right? I mean, I can't imagine that three go in the top 31 picks.
I mean, Barkley and Geis seem to be the two who are going to be in the first round.
Right. I mean, even Geis could be there.
Yes. Geis has a possibility of being there.
So. Especially with the injury with Ronald Jones and all that. I mean, it's not like a big long-term injury, but
no.
It's kind of put like an out of sight, out of mind kind of thing.
So Jones should be there.
Jones should be there. Good pro comparison. Everybody compares him to
Jamal Charles.
That seems to be the working comparison.
Are you on board with that one, though?
I could see it. I can't say that I watched him and was like, oh, man, he's Jamal Charles.
Yeah.
But I could see it. I see, you know, from the explosive speed and all that, the ability to get to the edge, he can impact the game as a receiver as well. I could see that. And then the third part, no, I don't think so. I don't think it hurts his long-term future because they just won a Super Bowl with three backs. So I'm not going to say that they're going to draft one in the first round and then sign Jay Ajayi the next day to a 5-year deal.
But
he could easily still be here for the long term.
Yeah, it just becomes a matter of would Jay Ajayi want to be part
of
a running back by committee. It's one thing if he's traded here on a rookie contract, he got out of a bad situation in Miami, comes here, wins a Super Bowl, and fit in with the locker room, loves Deuce Daly. But if you use a high draft pick on a running back, you have Corey Clement, who showed so much promise as a rookie. There obviously, I think, for him would be questions, and he probably would be thinking, I want to be able to cash out on my next contract. I don't know if that would happen here in Philadelphia if you're devoting a first-round pick-type resource to the running back position.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think it's going to be like, oh, yeah, they're going to draft him, draft our Ronald Jones or Darius Geis, and then the next day sign Jay Ajayi to a multi-year extension. But I don't think it's like precludes them from being able to keep him.
It doesn't. You have a whole year to see how this situation plays out. All right, next one. Write him. Left a comment as well as I'm reading through this here. So Albert Breer's latest mock draft had the Eagles taken Isaiah Oliver from Colorado with players like Darius Geis, Mike Gesicki, and Will Hernandez still on the board. Who would you pick in that situation?
Well, who would I pick is different from what, you know, we don't know what the Eagles would do. I guess in terms of like pros and cons, I mean, we've talked about it with the running back spot, right? Like,
yes.
With Geis or Ronald Jones, I think it's the same kind of deal. If you view Darius Geis as the guy that's going to keep you at the Super Bowl contending level at the running back position, and he'll be your featured guy and all that, then I think you pull the trigger there. Mike Gesicki, same deal. I think Mike Gesicki, honestly, and I would say the same for Dallas Goedert. He might be. Remember, a couple weeks ago, we talked about like who are players that might be too good to pass up.
Yeah,
Gesicki might be a guy who's like, if he's there at 32, which I think a lot of fans like think, oh, there's no way he's there. Like, I think there's a pretty good chance.
I figured he's there.
Yeah, exactly.
I haven't seen too many mocks.
No, there's not a lot of mocks. But I think after the combine workout, everybody's like, oh, he's not going to be there at 32.
Is it the Penn State bias?
Well, there's that too. Will Hernandez.
That's another one where you look at the Eagles right now and you say, all right, starting five, you're good for 2018. Isaac Seumalo is a wild card because you use a third-round pick on him a year ago, struggled this season, was utilized in, you know, as a sixth offensive lineman, but didn't really hold down that starting left guard spot like I think everyone expected him to. Then you figure, okay, maybe he's the future center, but Jason Kelsey's coming off an all-pro season, the best year of his career. So where does Seumalo fit into the mix, I think, is going to be a question. But going back to would one move preclude you from doing another, Will Hernandez might be a guy who you could say, okay, Wisniewski's your starter left guard this season. Does Hernandez become your starting left guard in 2019 and beyond?
The only thing that works against Hernandez, I think, is that he's a guard only. I don't know that anyone is where. I know that I think he may have taken some snaps off to the side at center at the Senior Bowl.
But he's a guard.
So, it's not like Wisniewski where he's got the guard center versatility. It's not like Seumalo who's got the ability to play all five spots along the line. That kind of hurts him a little bit, I think, because to me, if you're taking Hernandez, you're taking him with the intent that he's going to start right away.
Mm-hmm.
So and we don't know. Maybe he would. I don't know. But that would be the one thing against him would be, what is his versatility like? What is he going to do outside of being able to just play guard?
Then Isaiah Oliver, does he have nickel experience? I don't believe
he does. No, yeah. No. I think based on matchups, because he did shadow opposing number one receivers at times this year. So at times he would follow guys into the slot, but he's not. To me, I don't look at him and say, like, yeah, he's got slot corner ability.
I'm just trying to think of where does Oliver
fit in?
Long-term mix, because, okay, same thing. We talk about Jay Ajayi. Ronald Darby is going to the last year of his rookie deal. Now, you obviously use the 2 on Sidney Jones, and I think the Eagles are hoping that he – breaks through and becomes a, big contributor in his second year in the system. Use a 3 on Rasul Douglas, who was a huge help for the defense while Darby was sidelined with the ankle injury last year. Of course, you still have Jalen Mills. You've traded for Darryl Worley. The question is, who's going to be your slot next year with Patrick Robinson moving on to New Orleans? And I think you also have to start thinking about, do any of these corners factor into the long-term plan at safety?
No question.
Where maybe as you look at Jalen Mills and you're like, well, maybe Jalen Mills is our corner for 18, but maybe he starts, phasing into the picture at safety in a couple of years. So that's why a lot of people are wondering, why are so many people mocking a cornerback to the Eagles when they've invested so many resources and really overhauled the position? That's probably why. So it's not so much just a slot thing, because you would love to find a guy like Jair Alexander who could go and play in the slot tomorrow for you. It's who are going to be your starters down the road
here. It goes into the Lito Shepherd, Sheldon Brown here.
Yes, exactly. The last one from Apple Podcasts here, Matt ESQ, talking about some blocking tight ends. Who are some of your favorite late-round options? He loves Ryan Izzo. So you guys,
I love it. I just had the chance to watch Izzo for the first time in a long time. Or not the first time ever. I shouldn't say the first time in a long time. I really liked him. I love his play personality. He wants to get after defenders, practices good technique, keeps his hands tight, he runs his feet on contact, he plays with good pad level, he's strong, he's got the ability to block defensive ends one-on-one at the point of attack, both in pass protection and in the run game, not just in the ACC, but they played Alabama this year, they played Florida this year, they play Florida every year, so you see him against SEC talent as well. I'm a big fan of Ryan Izzo. Now, you got to gauge the value there, because he's not a pass catcher first. Can he catch the ball? Yeah, I mean, he's got the ability to be productive in the passing game, but he's not a downfield guy in the passing game. He'd be a short and intermediate threat, so that's going to affect his value. But in terms of being a football player, I love Ryan Izzo. That's why I was mentioning earlier with stacking him with Hayden Hurst and Dalton Schultz. Like, Izzo is a better blocker than all three, but he's probably the worst athlete of the three. So you just have to take that into account in terms of what you want.
Exactly.
But I'm a big fan of Ryan Izzo. In terms of other guys that block, Dalton Schultz, I think, he's a little bit smaller. He's a little bit leaner, but he gets after people. He's a good blocker for Stanford. Tyler Conklin, again, he's a little bit short in terms of he's 6'3", he's 254. He's more like, if you were to draft Tyler Conklin, I think he's doing more of the things that, like, Trey Burton did this year from a blocking standpoint. Troy Fumagalli, all the guy does is just give effort. I love Troy Fumagalli from Wisconsin. And I don't think he's, necessarily a starter at the next level, but the guy's really, really competitive. He's a good route runner. He's got good hands. He catches everything. He's really tough. I love that kid. Ian Thomas is another guy that blocks at a pretty high level as well, so there are some options there in terms of, quote-unquote, tight ends that can block.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting if the Eagles do pull the trigger and select a tight end. If a bunch of these guys are on the board, who do they select?
Right.
And what do they value? Because you might say, we're probably saying right now they need a number two in the mold of Brent Celek. Okay, but is that's good for what you're trying to fill, what you had in 2017? Is that what you really need long-term? So
right.
that's going to be fascinating for what the Eagles do from that standpoint. Or if they – I have to think they're going to pick a tight end at some point here.
At some point, you'd think, yeah.
You know, that's probably that's one of the positions where you look at the roster right now and as it's currently constructed and say, that's a spot they're going to need to address at some point. It's just a matter of when are they going to address it. So that's our three questions from our podcast. We have two from Twitter here. At Open Veins UK wants to know, any chance whether Leighton Vander Esch or Rashawn Evans make it to the Eagles at 32? So just hearing Brugler talk,
yeah,
Vander Esch seems like the one it's not as likely.
My guess is that, and I would love for him to be there, my guess is he won't be.
Yeah.
He would be, to me, like if he's there at 32, like that would be a surprise.
Evans, it seems like, will
be
there.
I think there's a solid chance. There's a better chance. I wouldn't say it's 100%. Like, we talked about, like, Gesicki and, like, some of these other guys, like Ronald Jones. Like, I think those guys are certainly going to be there.
Yeah.
I think Evans could go earlier, like, you know, the team like Pittsburgh or something like that. You know,
yes.
Right before the Saints. You know, there's teams ahead of them that I think could take them. But I think Evans is more likely.
All right. Our last one comes from at Marcos LA11. Why are so many people, we've actually kind of addressed this,
yeah.
Why are so many people mocking cornerback to the Eagles? It seems like they are only referencing the Super Bowl.
I think you can hit the nail on the head a couple of times.
I think
ago.
We pretty much said there is just because what's the future at the position? Yes, the talent's there now, but where do these guys fit into the long-term plan? Plus, they still need a nickel cornerback.
So off that topic real quick.
Okay.
So when I was at Temple, one thing, and I know that college teams do this, and I'm sure NFL teams do it too.
Mm-hmm.
You have what's called a flow chart.
Okay.
And so every year, and it was more done for like understanding who you have on scholarship. So you have it for the next 5, 6 years, 7 years, and you're able to look and say like, okay, 2018, so in this next season, here's where we have a quarterback, running back, receiver, tight end, you know, straight down the line, all your positions, and then what it looks like in 19 after guys graduate, and what it looks like in 20 after guys graduate. And you start to see, okay, in a couple years, we're going to start to be thin here. We're going to start to be thin here. We need to start thinking about making sure we go a little bit extra in scholarship offers, you know, this position or that position. NFL teams are thinking, if they don't physically do that, they're thinking about it the same way.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, right now, you know, you look at the corner group and you say, yeah, they're good right now. They can line up right now and play. They may look at it, and just like you said earlier, like if you know Ronald Darby's going to a contract year, is Jalen Mills a future safety? Is Roswell Douglas a future safety? Then that starts to change the numbers a little bit, and now you may look at it a little different.
So great questions, and again, please leave a comment, rate wherever you listen to our podcast, whether it's here on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, on PhiladelphiaEagles.com, or the Eagles app. So that's going to do it for another edition. Special thanks, as always, to BT, our man Brian Thomas, behind the glass for making us sound just okay. Some love to Dane Brugler for being our Mr. Relevant this week. Again, make sure to check out his draft guide. I'm actually going to download it, and I can't wait to get into it myself. So, Fran, any parting shots before we say farewell?
It's, 26 days
23
away?
Days.
Ugh.
23 days. And we've actually been mapping out the final podcast.
We have. We know what we're doing the next 3 weeks.
I know.
We're not going to tell you guys yet. We got to leave some element of surprise. I mean, if you've been listening to this point, I guess you're like a diehard because
yes.
You think we've wrapped the show.
Certainly. So if people are still... this is where we need to have like the secret code.
All right, so it's Greg Cosell next week. We've got good things, good plans coming.
No, I'm looking forward. These next couple of weeks are going to be a ton of fun. But you know, we should get some draft party tickets to give out to fans on the show because I know that they're available. I won't say on sale; they're free on Thursday the 12th, a week from Thursday. They're going to go fast.
Okay.
So I think we got to save some for the loyal listeners.
We got to work that out with legal.
We definitely have to make that happen. But either way, we will make this happen in the next couple of weeks. So for Fran Duffy, for Brian Thomas, I'm Chris McPherson. Thank you all for listening to another episode of the Journey to the Draft podcast.